Now, our next programme was recorded at this year's Edinburgh Festival exclusively for us here on Radio 4 Extra. To celebrate 47 years and 900 episodes of Just a Minute, one of its most expert players, Paul Merton, interviews Nicholas Parsons, its host and the only person to have appeared in every single edition.
Thank you very much. Thank you. First of all, thank you all for coming here. This is my name's Paul Merton. It says on this piece of card, so I'm going to read that out. This is an Edinburgh exclusive in honour of a radio show business living legend phenomenon. 2 years ago, we celebrated 45 years of Just a Minute, and expert mathematicians tell me this is the 47th year. And we've also recently recorded the 900th episode of Just a Minute. And the man who has been throughout the chairman, throughout that entire run, has never missed a single programme, is here tonight. Will you please welcome to the stage the living legend that is Nicholas Parsons! We've mentioned there at the beginning a couple of statistics. 47 years it's been running now, 900 episodes. When it first started, was it greeted with great enthusiasm by the BBC?
No, it was disaster. Absolutely. I mean, I wasn't supposed to be chairman. It was going to be Jimmy Edwards. He was a good choice, actually, because he'd just done a programme on Radio 4 called Does the Team Think? Mm. And they thought, you know, this sort of thing with people talking would be good. And I was going to be on the panel. And I wanted to improvise comedy. And we had a wonderful young director called David Hatch, without whom this would never have got on the air. He said, we're never going to get Jimmy on a Sunday to record the pilot. Will you do it for me? I said, no, David, I'm wrong. I don't want to do it. Please, please, please. He said, I'll do a deal with you. You do the pilot for me, and if we get the series, you can go on the panel. Well, the panel, it was a disastrous pilot.
Was it?
No, nobody wanted it. I mean, we had Clement Freud and Derek Nimmer who were good, two others who weren't. And I wasn't very good because I hadn't done any hosting before. I was a bit pompous and arch. I tried to do it as I thought they wanted at the BBC then, very formal, so forth. And David fought for it. It really wasn't good. And then he came to me and said, well, I managed to get a series. And he said, there's only one thing they quite enjoyed in the pilot, and that was your chairmanship. So you're stuck with it. And in show business, you don't turn down a good job. So no. I said, all right, I'll do it. And as I said, I must have done something right, because I'm still doing the same job after 47 years.
Well, fantastic. It is, I think that is another world record, I think. I believe it's... Now, before we start talking more about the sort of the history of the show, we've got a few clips that we're going to play in, audio clips from various parts of the show. Mm. And 900 shows, you could choose, you know, 1,000 different ways of doing it. Well, 900 different ways of doing it, probably. But the first one features somebody who's only ever played the game once.
Yes, because if I can interrupt the book,
go on.
I mean, the way the show's evolved, I mean, we had traditional talkers and raconteurs and comedians, and now they're bringing guests in, but they surround them with very talented people like you, and they had this gimmick of having a cricket commentator, Henry Blofeld,
yes,
and who was up here doing a show, and Henry's a lovely chap, and he's a talker. But sometimes they think, well, if he can talk, he'd be good on Just a Minute. But they don't realise, which you can explain, the incredible discipline of mind you require.
Well, I suppose, you know, he's obviously, you know, those cricket fans will know him. He's a supreme live broadcaster. But in live broadcasting, you don't have to worry about repetition, hesitation or deviation. As a natural talker, you might use all of those aspects as sort of rhetoric. So when he came to do the show, he had problems, didn't he?
Absolute problems, yes. He was all over the place. And you... You, actually, when he was struggling at some particular point, you, with your great comic skill, introduced an idea, which you'll hear in the recording, which I thought was comic genius, which helped to save that particular round.
Yes, it was true. It was true that it did sort of like... It became unlike any other Just a Minute round we've ever had.
That's right, yes.
Perhaps at this point we should have a listen to Henry Blofeld from last year.
And the subject is being a James Bond baddie. 60 seconds starting now.
I first became a James Bond baddie in 1961 with the publication by Ian Fleming of Thunderball. Ian and my father had been friends of a sort at school. My father was 3 years older than him. Although Fleming always liked to take the names of people he didn't get on with at school for his baddies, that hint suggests that my father, in fact, wasn't as great a friend as all that.
Sue Chan.
I was going to buzz on Fleming, Sue, and you stopped me with your hand. Foul play.
So I think that's very sad.
My hand slipped.
Oh, right.
And I withdraw my challenge because I would like to hear about Ian Fleming. Yes.
Henry, she's withdrawn her challenge. You've got time to take another breath and carry on with being a James Bond baddie. 36 seconds are starting now.
My father and Ian Fleming may not have been the greatest.
Go on, keep going.
My father and Ian Fleming may not have been the greatest of friends.
I've got a suggestion.
Yeah.
Can we call this round My Father and Ian Fleming? Let's do that.
It's one every minute, isn't it?
So give Paul a bonus point for his suggestion. Right, so the subject has now become My Father and Ian Fleming. So My Father and Ian Fleming has 32 seconds. Henry, starting now.
They knew each other and fairly well. And Ian took my father's name as the name of the baddie. Thunderball was the book.
Now, hang on, I'm confused. Did your dad know Ian Fleming?
I'm getting it terribly wrong, I'm sorry.
No, it's incredibly
but
hard.
Henry, this is a comedy show and you're contributing tremendously.
You, Henry, this would frankly be an infomercial about gravediggers from the 19th century. So.
Right. 22 seconds. Who was it? Paul, were you challenged?
I'm not sure.
I think everyone challenged me, so they've got to do it in unison.
Well, in that case, we give it back to you, Henry, if everybody challenged.
Absolutely.
And say that you have 22 seconds still, if you can, to keep going. What have we changed the subject
to? My father and Ian Fleming.
Yeah. My father and Ian Fleming. Start asking now.
When Ian Fleming started to write Thunderball one evening after dinner in his flat on the Chelsea Embankment, he wanted to think of the name of a baddie, and he couldn't, and he went to bed scratching his head, which is not always the best way of getting to sleep. He woke up scratching his head, and the next morning went to his club in London, and he looked through the membership list.
I think one of the things that really amuses me about that as well is that once we'd agreed, as he's kept repeating the phrase, my father and Ian Fleming, once we changed it to that, he didn't say it. When he could have done. But he plays it like no one else has ever played it. Mm. But we talked about the early days then of just a minute and you've been given the chairmanship of it. Now, how soon was it that we, for those who are fans of the show from way back, would remember that the sort of the quartet of Peter Jones, Clement Freud, Derek Nimmo and Kenneth Williams?
Were some number of people to begin with, including Geraldine Jones and others, and David Hatch experimented sometimes with three people. Eventually it evolved into four regulars, which was Kenneth Williams, Clement Freud, Peter Jones and Derek Nimmo. And they were the four regulars for many years.
Was it played in a different way in those early days?
To begin with, yes. I mean, to begin with, I think hesitation was more sort of hesitation from thought and deviation from thought and repetition was of the idea and so forth. In other words, this is where Clement got a bit cross with me because he wanted to keep it in a situation where there were four intelligent, erudite people talking interestingly, but not necessarily committing the verbal rules that we have in now.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And slowly it evolved. I take some credit for having refined the rules so they became more distinctive. And Clement wanted to keep it in a sort of old-fashioned cultural way. There were two programmes on at the time called My Word and My Music.
Yes.
Which were of their time and very indicative. Four intelligent people and a chairman that was very autocratic and just made rules and comments. And they just faded away.
Mm.
And just a minute would have faded the same.
How soon did you realise that this was going to become a popular show that became listened to throughout the world, in fact?
I don't think in show business you realise
it. It's more of a gradual.
You do a show, and if it goes well, you think, oh, well, we might be doing it again. And it slowly evolved. I think now it's established. We are fairly confident they will ask us to do some more. But at that time... but at that time, no, it just plodded along, and we all got together, and we had much the same audience, Kenneth Williams' mother always sat in the front row, and a sweet old woman called Lou, and kept her eyes riveted on her talented son. I never laughed, but just watched the wonderful little boy. And Derek Nimmer using his knowledge of travel to keep going. Peter Jones being very witty and acerbic. And Clement Foy being very intellectual and
competitive,
and
certainly.
And very competitive, yes.
And I mentioned the thing about it becoming a sort of programme that soon was picked up by the World Service and started being played all around the world. I was one of my first times that somebody came up to me and said they'd enjoyed me on Just a Minute. It was about 20-odd years ago here now, and a man passed me during the Edinburgh Festival on the street and said, oh, I was listening to you in the summer on doing Just a Minute, and I sort of just nodded, you know, thinking, well, that's nice. And he said, no, I was crossing the Nairobi desert in a Jeep. And he had it tuned to the World Service.
Yeah, the strange thing is, you know, that the World Service took it up and it became their most popular programme. And then they made a decision a number of years ago to drop all comedy shows from the World Service and wanted to only send out factual programmes and things which emphasise the culture and background and history of the British nation. And India, where they love language and words, became incredibly popular. And I used to get the most amazing fan letters from India. And you know, the Indians are very effusive in their praise. I used to get wonderful things, overwhelming with compliments. But this producer...
Did you put them in the book?
No, because I'd never kept them.
Oh, you should have done.
The funniest fan letter I ever got, or the most delightful one, was from an American. Because he wrote to me and said, why is Just a Minute not on the World Service? We love it. And I wrote back and said the World Service, in their lack of wisdom, have decided that they're only going to put on programmes which emphasise the culture and the background and so forth of the British nation. And he wrote back and said, a lovely letter, he said, nothing emphasises the whole nature and background and history of Great Britain than Just a Minute. It is the epitome of what is Great Britain. And he said, I feel so strongly about this, I'm going to send a copy of my letter to your Prime Minister. And then he put a PS in, on second thoughts, I'm also going to send a copy to your Queen. So I don't know whether she ever got the copy. I'd love to ask her if she ever did.
We have, you mentioned India there as being one of the places that was is very enthusiastic about Just a Minute, and it's often played over there as a kind of a game to refine your use of English language, to you know, be able to express yourself in different ways. For the 45th anniversary of Just a Minute, the BBC did a rather unusual thing. They flew us out to India for a few days, to Mumbai, in fact. We got a clip from this. This features myself, Marcus Brigstock, Anuvub Pal and Cyrus Brocher, and with Nicholas, of course, always in the chair. This is from March 2012.
And Anuvub, it's your turn to begin, and it is subject is colonial India, and your time starts now.
Wajid Ali Shah in colonial India was thrown out of Lucknow, and he didn't want to travel with any possessions or any money as long as he had access to 100 royal cooks to make him a perfect biryani.
Marcus Jones.
Hesitation.
Yes.
It's not often that biryani gets a whoop from a member of the audience.
Yeah, I know.
I think he should be allowed to hesitate. We're all hungry. Biryani, pause.
Exactly.
Right. Marcus, correct challenge. 46 seconds. Colonial India starting now.
The subject is colonial India, so now seems like a perfectly reasonable time for me to say sorry.
I just have one thing to say to Marcus.
Yes.
Hesitation.
So it is astonishing, really, that it has this international appeal. We talked earlier about the early people that used to play the show, Kenneth Williams particularly. Mm. Our next clip is one that does feature Kenneth. This is from about 1980.
So words of wisdom and humour.
Yeah, and it gets me nowhere. I don't get any marks anyway. What's the point? I ask myself.
You can ask yourself as often as you like.
Your performance
is
a disgrace. Shut up.
It was the impersonation.
Is that
what
I look?
I'm in the lead. Oh, I'm in the lead. God tell me I'm in the lead. Oh.
If that's what I look like, well, one of us is terrible.
So, Nicholas, there, we heard, because when you first started in show business, not people would know that you did impressions.
Yes, I was. And, I started as an impersonator.
Were you from a showbiz family?
No, it was from the earliest age. My parents were horrified. Because in those days, when I was young, You know, people just follow the line of the family tradition. And I showed talent to become an impersonator. I was always fooling around and making my school chums laugh. And my parents indulged this. And so when I got a bit older and I said I wanted to be an actor, my father was horrified. He said, "My dear chap," he said, "you don't do things like that. It's not a proper job. You've got to get a proper job." And my mother was horrified. She thought everybody in the entertainment industry was either debased or debauched or something. And someone like me would finish up as an alcoholic pervert in the gutter.
There's still time. It's only 8:30. Our next clip here from Just a Minute. The subject on this particular clip is why Just a Minute has lasted so long. Mind you, this was from 2003, so that's already, 11 years ago. The panellists on this are myself, I think, Graham Norton and Clement Freud.
44 seconds. You tell us something why Just a Minute has lasted so long.
The main reason Just a Minute lasts so long is because people keep interrupting. They continually...
Paul.
Hesitation.
Yes, because you interrupted. Right. Why Just a Minute has lasted so long and 37 seconds available, Paul, starting now.
It's extraordinary. I think because the actual way of playing it is capable of infinite variety. It's a bit like a game of draughts. It seems very simple, first of all. The rules aren't many, but because of the personalities that play the game, they each bring...
Clement, for your challenge.
Repetition of game.
Yes, you did repeat the word game before. So, Clement, a correct challenge. You tell us something about why you think Just a Minute has lasted so long. 22 seconds starting now.
I think it just seems long.
So then we had a flavour of sort of Clement there as well. He was a very competitive player of the game,
yes.
As indeed was Derek, wasn't he?
They were very competitive. I mean, we've not... Giles Brandreth is very competitive now, but again, nowadays, I mean, you are in your own way competitive, but you're very professional. And you know that the success of the show is more important than your own individual success. And I've noticed sometimes that you, Paul, and Peter, this is a great compliment, you, if you think you've been talking too much, will hold back and let others have a chance.
Well, yes, it's important to do that.
But, you see, the others didn't, and Clement would never give an inch. and he criticised me in his autobiography because he wanted to keep it as the rather old-fashioned stage show where four interesting and intelligent people showed off their knowledge and erudition. And it would have been so predictable, it would have been so boring. But that's what he wanted. He'd rather have it boring and so forth.
I think he was happier with that version of the show, I think.
Absolutely.
But, you've said some very kind words to me. But, Nicholas, one of the things that really has been important is your introduction of the... Well, it seems like a simple thing, but the introduction of bonus points for amusing challenges, even though they're wrong, means that sort of you can still get points and be funny without necessarily competing over every repetition of the or I or whatever.
Yeah. Originally, the rules were hesitation, repetition, or deviation from the subject. And when I stopped that and went to just for deviation on the basis that someone could challenge and come up with some bizarre idea of deviation, which is incredibly funny, and then I would say, well, I think you deserve a bonus point for that. You get a bonus point. He was interrupted. He gets a point. And so we have more fun. And to me, people have said to me, what do you think is the essence of the success of Just a Minute? And I think it's about having fun. And I think there should be more fun in life anyway. We should all laugh more about silly little things. I think that... I'm going to mention about you coming in because, I mean, you coming in was an amazing situation. I first met you when we were doing the Simon Mayo show.
That's right, Scruples, yes.
That's right. And I remember you said a wonderful line. I was talking and chatting and you suddenly said to me, because he's got this wonderful ability to be funny, and he said to me, you were never like this on Sale of the Century.
But it was a thrill to meet you. That was 1988, I think. Mm. And Just a Minute, by that point, had been going for 21 years already. I'd listened to it as a boy of 10 onwards, used to listen to it, you know, as it used to be broadcast with the four regulars. Then in the early 1980s, when I was living in a bedsit and I didn't have any money, but I did have a little cassette radio, so I would, although I didn't have a television or anything like that, I would tape episodes from Just a Minute off the radio and play them over and over again. So much so that I heard... one episode of Just a Minute on Radio 4 Extra about 2 months ago, which was one of the tapes I used to have, and I knew it word for word. I must have listened to it so many times. It became, but in a strange way, that kind of gave me, well, not in a strange way, I suppose in a perfectly understandable way, that gave me a knowledge and understanding of how to come into the show initially without ruffling too many feathers.
Yeah, because you came to me and you said, I love that programme you do on Radio 4. And I suddenly thought, my God, you'd be bloody good in that. And I'd never made any suggestions to our producers before for participants, but I did. I said to Ted Taylor, who was in our director, I said, there's a man called Paul Merton who's very funny, and I think he'd be brilliant in our show. He'd never heard of you. He said, is he an alternative comedian? I said, he's a comedian. I don't know what alternative means. He's just a bit different. And I remember Ted telephoning me and saying, and he was a completely traditionalist of the old school, auntie BBC. He said, well, we've had someone drop out, and I've cast this chap you suggested, Paul Merton. I hope he's going to be good, because I can tell you this, if he isn't, it's not my fault, it's yours. And so I was under pressure when you came on. But you did very... and for the first time on, you were amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Well, I think it was just the knowledge, you know, also being able to, you know, listen to it. I mean, that leads us neatly into another clip here, Nicholas, about... this is Kenny Everett. Now, those who remember Kenny Everett, he only ever appeared on the show once. This clip might explain why. he's talking on the subject... He's meant to be talking on the subject of marbles... This is from the 5th of February 1980. The other panellists are Clement Freud, Peter Jones and Kenneth Williams, but I think it's Kenny Everett that you hear mainly in this.
Marbles is a game that I'd last played when I was at St. Bede's Secondary Modern School for aspiring twits. And I always used to wonder, as I got my thumb into the marbleising position, about to flick and ruin all the others in the circle, I used to wonder how the heck they got those little coloured squirrely bits to go through the glass. You know, the
Keep going.
And anyway, I used to wonder whether they put them in after with a hypodermic or whether they built the glass around the coloured squirrely and how they got all the colours all to intertwangle with each other, all sort of mangling and tumbling in a gay abandon throughout the glass. That's what I used to wonder. And then I'd flick them, and in the middle of the circle they'd go scattering all the other marbles in all various directions, from east to west and north and probably south as well. And all the other kids would rush around saying, what a wonderful holly player the old geezer is, because they used to call them hollies as well, you know, and they used to call them other things. But I've forgotten what the other things were that they used to call them, because I was very young at the time. I'm 34 now, and it's been absolutely ages since I was at school, and so I've forgotten the whole thing. And anyway, it was the coloured squirrelies that caught my eye, really, because I had a great eye for coloured squirrelies, and I think I've done much more than a minute.
Well, I'm afraid we were very wicked. We let Kenny Everett go on talking for 90 seconds on the subject of marbles. During that time, he continued, repeated himself, deviated, and also hesitated.
I didn't lose his marbles.
That's an example of where you are seasoned professionals. If you realise something is funny, you let the person go so we can have entertainment.
Have you ever sort of felt like you'd like to have another go at being a competitor?
No. When I was, I mean, it was on a hiding to nothing, because we did four specials they put in at one time, and we had the four regulars whom I mentioned, and they decided as a gimmick that I should go on the panel, and each of them, Clement Freud, Peter Jones, Derek Nimmo, and Kenneth Williams, should all go in the chair for these four specials. And, of course, Clement was the first to go on, and he was determined I shouldn't get any points. But actually, I did manage to win. And then Peter Jones was quite good. Derek Nimmo was all over the place. Kenneth Williams sitting there, whether it was Sunday or Monday, it was ridiculous. And Ian Messiter, who used to blow the whistle, sitting beside him, he kept turning to him and saying, well, what do I do? Is that hesitation? Oh, yes. Oh, lovely. Is that lovely? Yeah. I'll give him a point. I'll give him a point. Yeah, you never have a point for that. No. And Ian Messiter was really running it. He just didn't know where he was.
You mentioned there, which is very good that you did mention Ian Messiter, because, of course, he's the one person who is vital to the whole thing of Just a Minute. We haven't mentioned him yet. Tell us who Ian Messiter was.
Well, Ian Messiter was a very creative man. He was an inventor, to my mind. He invented a number of radio shows like Petticoat Line and Who's...
Many a Slip, I think.
Many a Slip and many other ones. And he was a BBC producer to begin with for many years, and he was in South Africa. And that's where he tried out a programme called 1 Minute Please. According to what he said, it was when he was at school, his master called him up because he thought he hadn't been paying attention and said, "Now, Mesitar, I want you to repeat what I've just been saying, and you mustn't hesitate or repeat anything." And it stuck in his mind, so he had this idea, and then he had the idea of deviation, and so he had this program, which he did with Many a Slip. And Many a Slip was a sort of forerunner of Just a Minute, because I went to Ian, I knew him very well, and I said, "Ian, I've just had a success on radio with Listen to This Space, which I won an award for, and I want to do some improvised comedy. Have you got any ideas?" He said, "Well, I've got this program here, which I've adapted, and I'm going to call it Just a Minute." So I actually took it up to Roy Rich, who was then head of Light Entertainment, and I put the idea to him, and he said, "Yes, that's a good idea. Let's go with a pilot."
Well, we have our last clip here is features me, sadly. This is me doing a whole minute on flying saucers. Until I got sent this clip the other day, I'd completely forgotten this, because it's from February 1995. The other panelists are Derek Nimmo, Peter Jones and Steve Frost, although I don't know how much you hear of those. This is me from 20 years ago. Blimey.
Flying saucers. 60 seconds starting now.
Well, a flying saucer landed in my back garden about 19 years ago, and I got on it and went to the planet Venus. And it's true, because I've got photographs here of me standing on the surface of that particular planet. And anybody who says that this is false can come and outside and I'll give them a damn good fight, because I was trapped on that particular orb in space for years. I tried speaking to the Venusians and said, "Look, it's not my fault I'm here. I was kidnapped by one of your people." They said, "It's got nothing to do with us. It could have been anybody they picked up. We had Winston Churchill about 30 years ago. And before that, Sir Stanley Matthews, the Wizard of the Wings, spent a fortnight on this very surface." I thought, "Well, I'm very proud to be in such august company." And they said, "So you should be and all. What do you want for your dinner?" I said, "Well, what have you got?" They said, "Well, we can offer you fish cakes, if that's not too fantastic for you." I thought, "It's quite an extraordinary concept, the idea of eating that particular meal out here, this far away from the Earth where I was originally came from." They said, "Well, look, do you want it or not?" I said, "Well, it'd be fine." So at that point, they produced a doner kebab, which to all intents and purposes was completely cold. I said, "Why is this not served up hot?" They said, "We got it from a shop in Highgate, and it's a long way away to bring it all the way from that particular part of North London to where we're standing now." I said, "Okay, I go along with that. What have you got to drink?" They said, "Well, we've got Watney's Red Barrel." I said, "That is just too fantastic, because nobody outside of the..."
Paul, I must come in there, because, you see, this is where I think where you illustrate your comic genius. I mean, others... I mean, he didn't hesitate, repeat or deviate.
I did plan it a couple of times. Was,
no. I mean, the thing is, he went into the world of fantasy, which you can do. Anybody could have challenged for deviation, but that's where their sporting kept back. And it's your contribution to the show which has helped to make it so successful.
Well, yeah, you're very kind, Nicholas, you are. But we're coming to the end, sadly, Nicholas, of this show. How do you think the show will go on from here? I mean, it just goes from strength to strength, really, doesn't it?
Well... some people who've won their spurs have proved they can play the game. They're on the producer's wish list. And we have a whole queue of people who want to come on because they love the show. So the producer now has a nucleus of regular performers who have proved themselves in it. And occasionally we bring in someone new, but you always make sure you surround them with three regulars, otherwise... they can struggle.
Well, I think it's good, it's useful, because it shows that if you have three regulars, there's an etiquette, I suppose, is what we've been sort of saying all the way through, that if somebody is being amusing, then you let them go. If you have two new people on the show, they don't know that, and they pick up on "the" and "I" and things like that. But I think it's, you know, Nicholas, you said some very kind words to me, but after all, this is really about you here. It is extraordinary that you've done 900 shows, and there seems to be no way of getting rid of you. It's absolutely... Yeah, it's an absolutely phenomenal achievement. Ladies and gentlemen, the Magnificent Man!
Thank you.
Thank you.
They like him. They really like him. The teeny tiny minute waltz ending Just a Minute, an Edinburgh masterclass. It was recorded at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe in August.